Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 110, I chat with Boxy CEO and co-founder Avner Ronan about online TV. Coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded May 7th, 2012. Episode 110, Boxy Boxing Day. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, online editor of hometheater.com. This week's guest geek is Avner Ronan, the CEO and co-founder of Boxy. And we're going to be talking about internet TV and the new paradigm. Hey, Avner, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Those who are logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv or watching live at live.twit.tv can post questions for Avner in the chat room, and I'll pass along as many as I can. So, Avner, obviously the TV industry is changing in a big way, especially in distribution, moving from linear cable, satellite, and so on, broadcast, to essentially online VOD. How is this being managed? How did we get here? How did this come about?
I think it's a natural evolution that has been happening over the last few years. I mean, Netflix is obviously a completely on-demand experience, and DVR, which has been with us now for over a decade, has changed the way people watch video. And those are two very popular ways for people to get favorite shows, which are by design are on-demand. So I think we're getting near to a point where, for most consumers, they'll only tune into the linear broadcast when there's something that is time sensitive, that is live. So it's a live sports game or news or the finale of a reality TV show. Those will be the events in which you'll tune into something live. In all other cases, I think on demand would give you a better user experience and something that the user can be more in control of and get content that he really likes. So The result of it is a real change in consumer behavior that's going to have a major impact in the TV ecosystem.
Of course, the big question that a lot of my readers on hometheater.com have about this, and I do too, is the trade-off between image quality and sound quality and bandwidth, available bandwidth into the home, which in the U.S. is pretty low. I haven't checked the 2010 stats, but in 2010, the average bandwidth into U.S. homes was something like 7 megabits. And so therefore, a lot of people have a lot less than that. And the less you have, of course, the lower the quality of the experience. How can we address this problem?
Well, it's top of mind for the FCC to improve bandwidth speeds across the U.S. and specifically in urban areas. So I think this is obviously just going to get better. I think aspiring to have 50 megabit down or 100 megabit down connections for all across the U.S. is probably not realistic. But trying to target the major urban areas, target the top 20 cities and make sure that they have bandwidth that is European grade or Asian grade, I think is definitely doable, and it's in the best interest of the cable and telco companies. It's something that FCC want to see happen. So I think you see the dollars going in that way, and I think we're on a scale of improvement overall. Today you can do a pretty decent video quality in a 2 megabit connection. So if you want to watch a 480p or 720p stream, online, you can do it with a 2 megabit connection pretty consistently. And then you have services like Vudu that streaming 1080p that are doing an amazing job at it. And you know, if you do the Pepsi test for many consumers, they wouldn't know the difference between something coming over the internet versus something coming over cable. So I think we're getting to a point where the internet could be a reliable means of delivering of HD content. Not the Super Bowl, maybe, but you know, if you want to watch a movie or a TV show, then you know the internet is in a point where it's good enough. And long term, I wouldn't bet against the internet not solving the issue for also mass market broadcast of HD content.
Doesn't Vudu do a lot of buffering or even downloading as opposed to real-time streaming in order to get that HDX quality, which is their high-quality service?
Well, they have a hybrid model, and they have a pretty sophisticated delivery mechanism, but I think most homes would not see a lot of buffering. And if you chose a level of service that your bandwidth does not support, they'll suggest you to downgrade, and you can have a pretty consistent experience. And at least from the users that we see, those that opt in for a service like Vudu have great bandwidth at home. So they'll have 5 and 10 megabit connections, and they can enjoy the HD quality pretty well.
Yeah. Steve C. in the chat room is pointing out that most people around Phoenix on Quest DSL have only 1.5 megabits per second. Now, DSL generally... Yeah, it's depressing. now DSL generally doesn't give you the bandwidth that that cable does. Am I correct about that?
Right. But there's more advanced forms of DSL that would give you better bandwidth. But the telcos are... moving to fiber in the major cities, so they need to pick their battles and where they make their investments. And obviously, in places where Verizon have services like FiOS or AT&T have UVerse, then they take care to have a great fiber connection. And you can get a pretty great quality of service. But again, it's not something that you can expect in every city in the U.S. I think we may see some bandwidth migration. You'll see people that really care about internet moving to towns and cities where they can get great bandwidth. I know it happens in Europe, so I wouldn't be surprised to see people relocate just based on how much bandwidth they can get.
Migration due to bandwidth availability.
Yes.
I was going to ask you. You mentioned that cable companies would benefit from an increase in bandwidth overall, and they'd be putting money into it. But wouldn't that be somewhat against their interest as a linear broadcaster? I mean, cable companies have a lot of money invested in doing linear broadcasting, and yet I know they're also involved in streaming. So how do they reconcile these two different approaches?
So first, broadband is a great business for them today. If you listen to some of the conference calls of those companies, because many of them are public, they're trying to educate Wall Street about the fact that they're becoming more broadband companies than video companies, and they'd like the street to measure them on what penetration of broadband do they have and what utilization. And broadband is actually, in many cases, a higher margin business for them. So they do have motivation to get people to adopt broadband and move up to a higher tier of broadband. When it comes to the conflict with their video business, I think if you look at what Comcast is doing now with Xbox, where if you stream Xfinity on Comcast, it not goes against your bandwidth cap. That's one way in which they're trying to benefit from both ends. So they'll you're getting Comcast broadband, but if you watch video from Comcast, it won't count against your bandwidth cap, which obviously is irritating to some of the pure over-the-top streaming players.
Well, sure. And in fact, that was one of my next questions was, most broadband providers now do cap the amount of data that you can get per month without either charging you a bunch extra or down throttling you to a lower speed or cutting you off altogether. Right. How do we adjust to that in this new paradigm?
Well, that, you know, that's a major concern. It's a concern for the FCC, and what, that's what they were trying to push for net neutrality, and specifically they wanted to avoid this case where there is a conflict of interest, where a company that provides the pipe is also providing the content and is using the pipe as an advantage to deliver its own content versus somebody else's. You know, today, if you're going to use the Xfinity service on Comcast and you're going to watch something from HBO, you know, that episode may be available for you on iTunes and on Vudu and on Xfinity, same quality, you know, same episode. In one case, you'll stream it and it will go against your bandwidth cap. In another case, you'll stream it and it would not. That seems a bit wrong. The argument that Comcast is making is this is actually not going over the open internet. It goes over a managed network. But I think it is something that is of concern, and I'm sure the FCC is looking into it, because you definitely don't want to be in a position where whomever owns the pipe has an unfair advantage on the content game.
Yeah, exactly right. Web3381 in the chat room says, migrate to Canada. They don't cap or throttle. I don't know. Maybe that's true. I don't know. It sounds good to me.
It's a business decision. I think if the broadband market would become more competitive like it is in Europe, and you'll have more pure plays that, you know, I just want to provide as a service provider the best broadband possible, then, you know, if it's in a market where there are caps, maybe I'll make the decision to go without caps, and that's going to be what attracts some certain people to my service. I think putting caps, while unfortunate, and I definitely would love to have service that is unlimited, that's a valid business decision. The only thing is you don't want to be in a place where those are caps that are discriminating against certain services. So if it's caps, it's caps for everybody.
Right. Marmot in the chat room says that's completely false. Almost all Canadian ISPs cap. So we got a couple of different people in the chat room.
Can still migrate to Canada for the weather.
Yeah, and I would too, at least British Columbia. I've been there and it's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
Well, tell us a bit about how you came to found Boxy, which is a company, obviously, that provides a box that lets you stream all kinds of content. How did you come to found it? What was your goal there? How has it evolved?
So I moved to the US not for bandwidth at the beginning of 2000, I guess. So 12 years ago, and, you know, coming from Israel, where we at the time had very few channels. So I signed up for cable and got all those channels and was amazed. So I signed up for everything, you know, all the movie channels, like just took everything I can get and spent hours just channel surfing between hundreds of channels. And then a year later, I think, or that same year, I got TiVo for the first time. And that completely changed the way I watch television. Because I could, you know, like everybody else, I could decide when I want to watch something. But then in 2003 or 2004, I connected my first computer to the television screen, and that made, you know, a further major change in the way I consumed television, because now I could start getting content from the internet and watch it on TV. And over the years, I saw that, you know, I'm spending more time watching stuff from my computer on my TV than on my TiVo. So that back in 2007... figured together with friends that had the same type of pattern that there must be an opportunity there to make it easy for people like us to do exactly that, get content from the internet on the TV and make it in an easy way. And we started as a pure software company, and about a year ago, just a bit more, we're able to get a device out together with D-Link that makes it even more approachable. And I think that's the path we've taken, is we're making it easier and easier for people to have a TV that is connected to the internet and get any content you like and make it easy with a remote control and watch any video format. And then earlier this year, we also launched support for broadcast television with Boxy Live TV. And that enables you to connect an antenna or a basic cable service and get the broadcast channels together with Netflix and YouTube and Vudu and so on. And we believe that that is a great alternative for people compared with paying $75 a month for a cable TV subscription. So pay $8 a month to Netflix, get an antenna, and you can get most of the content you watch anyway on cable is on broadcast. So get that for free in HD, 20 megabit streams if you have good reception. And we think that's something that more and more consumers would do.
So the live TV gives you, basically translates to a 20 megabit stream?
Yeah, the antenna that you put there.
Oh, sure, it's 19.2 actually.
Yeah. So for many people, their assumption is antennas is like this thing that is very old and you get very grainy service and standard definition. But the reality is that today, if you have a good reception, you can get HD streams, actually higher quality than what you'd get from cable because those are uncompressed and you get them for free. If you have bad reception, you can call your cable company and get the basic tier, not the basic extended, but just pure basic. And you pay, you know, 10 or 15 bucks a month wherever you live. And you can get those channels. So we think there is a real opportunity for people to spend less money on their television service and actually get a better user experience.
Well, you bring up basic cable and being able to just plug that into the live TV thing, add-on to the Boxy Box. But that brings up a very sticky subject, which is that more and more cable companies are starting to talk at least about scrambling or encrypting even their basic cable service, requiring you to have a cable box.
Right.
How do you respond to that trend?
Well, we responded very, very publicly to those efforts at the FCC. The cable companies went to the FCC asking to encrypt. The end result for consumers would mean that if you have today a TV that just connects to the cable that comes out of your wall, that TV would stop working unless you get a set of box from the cable company. And a device like Boxy would not work, again, unless you get the cable box from the cable company. And we think this is not great for consumers by any means. It reduces competition. It increases the amount of money you'll have to pay every month. And it makes it harder for companies like ourselves to try and make the overall experience better. So we made that case to the FCC. We hope that they're listening. And it's not that we have an issue with the concept of encryption. Today, if you use Boxy, there's many services that encrypt, whether it's Netflix or Major League Baseball or stuff like Vudu is encrypted, obviously. So it's not that we have a religious issue with the notion of encryption. We just want the ability to decrypt it on our device and make it available for consumers. So our point to the cable companies is if you'd like to encrypt, you should provide companies such as ourselves and the TV makers with an ability to decrypt without requiring the user to get additional hardware and pay additional monthly fees.
Why do you think they're doing that? Why do you think the cable companies want to go in this direction?
We think the major reason, or there's two major reasons. One is they'd like people to get to have more boxes at home. If I'm using a cable box.
Oh, great. Just what I need, more boxes at home.
It has an initial cost to them to send you that box, but then, you know, they have you as a consumer. You're going to use their VOD system. There's a good chance that they'll get you to get a higher end box with a DVR on it. You're probably, if you're on that box rather than on the Boxy box, you're going to use their VOD system versus use Vudu or Netflix. So, you know, there's a clear business interest there to both increase the revenue that they get from every user and make it harder for the competition to come in on their territory. Mm. We just don't think that the FCC should be in the business of making it easier for cable companies to maintain their effective monopoly.
Yeah. So that's one reason. Did you say there were two?
Yeah, it's increased revenue and blocking competition. Those are the two.
Oh, that's it. Okay. Gotcha.
Yep.
Gotcha. You mentioned that at first Boxy was a software company providing, I think, software for PCs, right?
Right. Yeah. And yet we still are a software company. It's just that to get the software and make it as a as easier as possible for people to set up, we partnered with D-Link, which is a company from Taiwan. Mm-hmm. And they're making a device, the BoxyBox, that that runs our software and is as easy to set up as, you know, as a Blu-ray player or a DVD player. So we focus now most of our attention on running that software that runs on that device. There's also another device from iOmega that is available in Europe. But we think that while 5 years ago it may be the case that the easiest way to get Boxy was to set up a home theater PC in your living room or get the Mac Mini in your living room and set it up, that's something that is appealing for some people with you know, with geek cred, but is very hard for a mainstream for a mainstream person to even think about, not to talk about, you know, actually going through and handling the setup. And also, it's more expensive these days. You know, you can get, you know, a box like Boxy in a much cheaper than setting up a computer. So we think that's definitely where it's going. And we realize that there's going to remain always a number of people that want to have the ultimate setup in their living room, and they're going to, you know, going to convince their spouse that you know, a PC needs to sit there underneath the TV. But we think that's that's not where the mass market is, and that's where we need to focus our efforts as a company.
Do you still offer the PC software?
No, not really. It's something that we phased out earlier this year. I mean, people can still, I guess, find it online and use it. And, you know, we released an update earlier in this year when we told users that we're going to focus now on the device. And we still have many users, hundreds of thousands of users that are using the PC or Mac version. But we believe that over the next 12 months, we'll have more users using the Boxy Box than using computers. Or, you know, there's also people using Boxy on iPad and so on. But we're very focused on the device.
Right. At the moment, though, are you saying that there are more people using Boxy software on PC and Mac than there are using the hardware box?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh,
so it was, yeah, it was, you know, a hard decision for us, but we looked at, you know, where we are as a startup in terms of resources, where do we focus our attention, and also where the future is. And it was clear to us that maintaining both versions of the software is going to become more and more challenging because the operating system is different and the browser is different and the DRM is different and the video decoding is different between those platforms. So it required a lot of work. And that the future setup for people is not computers in living rooms, but rather, you know, a dedicated device that is running in the living room, or even just the software embedded into a TV set.
Mm-hmm. Now, I did just set up a Boxy Box myself so that I could, you know, play around with it before we spoke, and it was a very good experience. It was very easy, as you say. It you know, you just plug in the power, you plug a HDMI cable to your TV or your AVR, the thing boots up and works extremely well. One question I have for you, though, is why did you make this box a cube that kind of stands on, that has a truncated corner, and it sort of stands on this corner, and it's this big cube. Everything else in my rack, of course, is, you know, like a Blu-ray player, a DVD player, is a kind of a skinny black rectangular box that fits in with everything else. Why did you go with this industrial design?
Yeah, the melted cube.
Yes.
Yeah, we debated it internally, but then figured that, you know, as a startup and with a very techy, geeky user base to begin with, early adopters, that we could afford to be a little bit out there with the industrial design. And for some people, they love it and it's a conversation piece and they're proud of it. And, you know, it works great. Other people think we're assholes or douchebags for doing this design. I don't know where the tally goes, whether it's 50-50 or, you know, 80-20, but, We figured, you know, we could afford it with the initial box. The iOmega box that is sold in Europe has a much more traditional rack-friendly design, and we'll see where Dealink goes with their next box, where other, you know, other device manufacturers are going to go. But we think it served us well in some respect, and maybe, you know, reason for somebody not to buy that box for others. But we, you know, we like it; it's iconic. It can sit in a rack as long as it's on top. We'll see, you know. I don't know where new designs are going to go, but definitely if you want to make Boxy more approachable to mainstream consumers, it has to do not just with hardware design, but also a lot of it with just user experience design. You know, you're home theater geeks and you found it easy, we'd like home theater moms and dads, you're competing podcast to find it.
You know, I should make a new podcast called Home Theater Moms and Dads. That's a good one. There we're seeing, those of you who are watching the video, we're seeing a picture of the Boxy box, which actually, you know, I have to say, I like the industrial design. It's striking.
It's not as, you know, like this picture makes it seem as if it's like the size of a subwoofer. It's, you know, it's more like a...
No, it's like, I don't know, three inches on a side, right, roughly?
Yeah, it's as tall as a Coke can.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing I asked one of your representatives, Liz, about this, and she said, well, if you don't like the look of it, put it in a box because the remote works on radio frequency, RF, not IR, as most remotes do. So there doesn't have to be line of sight between the remote and the box, which is brilliant.
That's true. You don't have to, you don't have to have a line of sight with the remote because it's not IR. So we don't encourage it, but you can hide it. You can put it in a different room, you know, or you can just mess around with, you know, with your friends and family and just take the remote someplace else and change channels. But RF has its advantages, definitely. From a, you know, long distance and you don't have to point it. Obviously, most people, when they use it, they point it just you know, that's what we're used to doing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the things I love about the remote is how simple it is. You know, there's basically two buttons, three buttons if you count the enter button, and then a four-way rocker, a navigation rocker. The use of it is very intuitive, with so few buttons. It seems you sort of took an Apple approach to that in a way. I mean, Steve Jobs famously, you know, insisted that the Macintosh mouse have one button and that's it. And you have more than one, but not too many more than one.
Yeah. When we tried to channel Steve Jobs, we said also have just one button, but then... We couldn't make it work.
Couldn't quite go that far, right?
We tried to keep it simple. You know, the average remote that you'll get from your cable box or TV has, you know, over 40 buttons, and still people use like, you know, only six or seven of them. So we try to keep it somewhere in that range of buttons. And every time somebody had an idea for why this button is worthy on making itself to on the remote, we had a big fight whether it's a remote worthy or not. So you know, we try to be disciplined to keep the experience simple, both on hardware and on software. And I think on the remote side, we got it almost as simple as we can without doing something fancy like a touchscreen that would make it much more expensive. On the user interface front, I think we still have long ways to go to make it as approachable and as familiar as it could be for the average consumer.
You're talking about the on-screen user interface.
The on-screen experience.
I can see where you might think that, and I could certainly probably come up with some suggestions. But overall, my first impression was pretty good. Now, also, I have to admit that I generally am able to sort of suss out user interfaces and how things work pretty easily. So I may not be a typical consumer.
Right. No, I think it's more of first, thank you. And, you know, we spend a lot of time on the user experience. And I think right now we have one of the best experiences in the market, if not the best, but we're also our biggest critics internally. And I think it's more of a philosophy thing when it comes to the UI. The biggest issue I have with our user experience right now, frankly, is that it makes you spend too much time figuring out what to watch and what to watch next. And I think, you know, and part of it is just the nature of the service, that it gives you access to so many sources of content, and you have a browser and you can basically watch anything that is online, which is a blessing and a curse, because in many cases, it doesn't matter whether you're a geek or a novice user, whether you're 24 or 64. In many cases, when you just sit down on the sofa after a long day, you just want to watch something. You know, you don't want to spend 5 minutes drilling through menus and going in and out of apps to find an 8-minute video to watch, and then you'll have to spend another 5 minutes watching the next. You know, that's just not, it's not a great living room experience, I think. And that's something that any, I think any platform in our space is having as an issue, is we need to streamline, as an over-the-top industry, we need to streamline the experience so people can sit back, relax, and watch something without thinking too much, because you don't want to be thinking when you're watching television in most cases.
Right, right. Well, I want to get into content next. But first, one other piece of hardware, one more hardware question, which is, you say, you've got a web browser on there, and you can basically navigate to anywhere.
Yeah. And
the really good news about your remote is that it's, as you call it in your literature or in your documentation, two-faced. You've got these three buttons and a cursor control on one side. On the other side, you have a QWERTY keyboard that lets you enter data in, you know, names and URLs and so on into the web browser, which is brilliant. Now, it's pretty small, and my big thumbs have a little trouble with that. I don't like thumb typing anyway, but that's just me.
Yeah.
But I think it's a great idea to have, there's a picture of it, in fact, a QWERTY keyboard. I did notice, though, that when I was trying to move the cursor around on the browser, it starts out very slow. And if you hold down the right, left, or up or down button, it gets faster and has a tendency to overshoot where you want to go. So it starts out a little too slow and then gets a little too fast. So I might suggest, there might be a way to adjust that, or maybe even a user control that, like there are on computers, you know, how fast does your mouse move when you move it, that kind of thing.
Yeah. By no means, I think using up, down, left, right is a great way to control a cursor on a screen. So it's, you know, I'm sure we can make it better, but I think in general, it's just, it's something that would never consolidate into a great experience.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. What about making?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, what about making the remote into what they call an air mouse? Some TVs, like LG, I forget who else, has that capability where you wave the wand around essentially, and it moves the cursor on the screen. Have you thought about that?
Yeah. I mean, we have on our iPhone remote, you can use it more as a, you know, like as an air mouse. About waving the remote around, I think that's great when you're a Jedi on a, you know, Wii game. But if you just want to watch the last episode of How I Met Your Mother, you don't want to be waving anything around besides moving your thumb a little bit and sticking your other hand in the popcorn bowl. So that's the challenge, right? We need to make it so it's so easy and so effortless that you don't have any friction or aggravation with the navigation, and you just get to watch what you'd like to watch. So I think that's where we, as an industry, and specifically we're trying to focus our attention, is how we make those things much more approachable and self-explanatory for people. And, you know, some things just are born in sin, like a browser on the TV. I think this is a fallback for us. It's not something that I believe will ever deliver on a great user experience. But right now, that may be the only way we can provide our users with the ability to access certain content. So it's kind of a necessary evil. But in our dream of what the future of TV is, that dream does not include the browser, unless it's a nightmare.
Not a dream, but a nightmare. Well, next, I do want to get into online content. And in order to do that, I'd like to start by thanking our sponsor for this episode, one of the premier sources of online content, and that, of course, is Netflix. Netflix gives you the access to thousands of TV shows and movies instantly on your PC or your Mac or your Boxy box. I was watching some Netflix on Boxy. Even Roku, virtually any consumer electronics device these days has Netflix access on it. Game consoles, Blu-ray players, TVs themselves. And all of them give you the opportunity to instantly stream TV shows and movies to your TV or your computer or your smartphone or your tablet instantly without having to wait for discs in the mail or do any of that stuff. You can even start on one device and finish on another. There's so many options and conveniences that Netflix offers you that we here at TWIT really would like you to give it a try. All you have to do is go to netflix.com/twit for a 30-day free trial. Be sure to use that URL. That's netflix.com/twit. And we thank Netflix for their support of the TWIT Network and Home Theater Geeks. So Avner Ronan of Boxy, CEO of Boxy, is here with me. And we are talking about the new paradigm of TV. That is streaming TV from online using the Boxy box, for example. And as I said, I was able to get onto Netflix no problem and enter my account information. And now the Boxy box knows that. So every future time that I go, subsequent time that I go to Netflix, it knows that it's me and just calls up what I have in my instant queue and what else is available. One of the questions that I wanted to ask you, Avner, is this whole paradigm that we're talking about, online delivered TV, there's a problem that I see, which is integrating online sources, because there's online sources from all over the place. There's Netflix, of course. There's the various individual networks like CBS and so on. There's twit.tv, our own network that we're on right now.
Right.
In looking around on the Boxy apps, which is where most of the content is found, you have a ton of them. But as I look at the online offerings on one device or another, they're not always the same. They're never really quite the same. And even, say, the Netflix app on the Boxy box versus a Samsung TV versus a Panasonic Blu-ray player, the user interface, the user experience that we were talking about just a moment ago is different. And even sometimes the content, the available content is different. How can we make this more universal?
Yeah, those are, just signs of the fact that this is still early in the game for this industry. So you can see this inconsistency in user experience and inconsistency in content offerings that is really confusing for consumers and inefficient for content owners. So I don't think it will last. I think the platforms are going to get more standardized. So somebody like Netflix would not have to create different versions of their app for different devices. So probably there's going to be consolidation there. And I think some of the content issues are going to get resolved. So you'll have more consistency on content offerings. And I think we're getting to the point where for consumers, if they pay for a service, and I think Netflix on that front is doing a really good job. If you pay $8 to Netflix, you expect it on every device and you expect the same library on every device. And they're pretty successful in doing that. They do have some different user experiences, but at least the content library is similar and it's one price for access to all devices. So I think we'll see more of that. Some of the content restrictions are going to take years to resolve. Different windows and different agreements that limit the way content can be distributed. are just frustrating consumers. So I don't think that would last. Right now, that's the state of affairs. But I think there's there's things to hope for on that front. And the more people like us are streaming from Netflix rather than watching on cable, the more we rent from Vudu rather than rent a VOD title from the cable industry, the more money there is on over the top, the more the media companies and content owners will have to pay attention. Right now, we still live in a world where most of their money is coming from the traditional distribution channels, and they have to live by certain restrictions imposed on them by that channel. So the more we can do as consumers to spend our money and time over the top rather than on cable, the faster this industry is going to move.
Yeah. I've got a bunch of questions in the chat room I'm going to get to here in a second, but I do want to ask you, what is the origin of this term over the top, which is what is now the term applied to streaming TV? How did that term, all of a sudden it appeared, OTT, and yeah. I have no idea how or why.
I think the origin is from the Sylvester Stallone movie with the hand wrestling competition. I'm kidding.
I just found out yesterday, by speaking of hand wrestling or wrist wrestling, yep, that Petaluma, the home base of the twit.tv network, I heard was the wrist wrestling capital of the world. Just a little piece of trivia there for you.
Yeah, I saw a documentary about wrist wrestling recently on Netflix. But I think where it came over the top is that it's coming over on top of the broadband connection. So it's not part of the, it's not part of a pay TV service. It's not part of the cable pack. It's coming over the top, over broadband, outside the traditional package. So outside the pay TV wall. Yeah, I'm not sure that's a term that's going to hit with consumers, but in the industry, yeah, that's what we use. But users don't care much about what we talk about in the industry. They care about how do I watch, the latest movie or, last year's season of Mad Men, and they want an easy way to find it and make it available on every device. It's, it's pretty straightforward for consumers. I think we're in a case where consumers and technology are way ahead of industry, but like always with those things, the industry will have to catch up. Eventually, content makers want to make their content available to as many people as possible, and the more people that are going to be out there watching their content online, the faster this transition is going to happen. So I'm overall optimistic most days.
Most days, right. Let's see. Deadmonton in the chat room asks, will you still focus on Boxy's web TV channels by adding web channels that are currently available but not on Boxy? I guess the question is, are you going to continue to add channels in the future? I assume so.
Yeah, I think so. I think we need to, again, getting back to the user experience, we need to make it a bit more straightforward and approachable. So if I'm watching Home Theater Geeks and I'm doing it consistently, that there is an easy way for me to get to it, and it's just part of the menu of things that I can quickly get to and becomes part of my habit, I think we need to get better at that. But mm-hmm. I think what we're seeing with YouTube now and with other online players is they're trying to do to cable what cable done to traditional broadcast television, right? When it used to be that we had only a few channels on broadcast, then cable came in and digital cable, and suddenly rather than six channels, we had 100 and 200. Now with the internet, rather than 200, we can have 2,000 or 5,000 professionally produced channels of content. That's what, I think part of what YouTube is trying to drive for, and they're putting a lot of efforts and money into it. So I think we'll see more of that. Better content that is more niche, but professionally made and available only online. And the more we make it approachable and level the playing field on the TV, where people still spend most of the time watching videos, I think the better it will be for the industry. So, mm-hmm. You should still be seeing a lot of web content finding its way to Boxy. Hopefully we can make it so it's easier to discover and easier to consume.
always the goal. Havasu Bob in the chat room says, asks how sales are doing for the Boxy Box.
They're doing well. It's, and you know, it's available in the right now in Best Buy and in Fry's and in, you know, a bunch of electronic stores, and also being sold online. The main issue we have, or two issues that we have with sales of Boxy Box: one, the price is still relatively high. It's $180 in most stores. And then if you want the live TV, that's another $50 that you have to spend. So that's quite expensive for the category. Second is, you know, as a startup brand, in many cases, people will go into a store and they'll see, you know, a variety of boxes sitting on shelves. If you don't have a recommendation from a friend about what Boxy is, you're unlikely to just buy one on a whim. And we didn't invest money so far in having strong presence in retail stores, have people there that are trained on what is Boxy, and more supporting sales material. So as a startup with relatively low brand recognition, it's going to be harder for us to operate in a pure retail environment. So if we want to move more units, I think we'll need to do two things. We'll need to have boxes out there that are cheaper than what we have right now out there, and we'll have to have a stronger presence in stores where it's being sold, so people can learn more about the product and get familiar with its benefits before they, you know, they go and make a choice on what they want to use.
Mm-hmm. Dwayne Knight asks, do you see Xbox as a competitor?
Not directly, but if the only thing you want to do is watch Netflix, then you know, and you have an Xbox, then there's no way that you're going to buy a Boxy device. But today, Netflix, as you mentioned, is available on so many devices. You know, you may have it on your TV, on your Blu-ray player, on your Xbox. So many ways to get it in the living room. So we, as a company, have to be more than just, you know, a way to get people Netflix on their TV. You know, there's no way for us to be in there. So in that sense, you know, the question was about Xbox's competition. In that case, it is. But, you know, we think that what we're trying to build at Boxy is not just a way for you to get Netflix on TV or a certain app on the TV. We're trying to be an alternative to your pay TV bill, an alternative to your cable box. And I think on that front, that's not how people perceive Xbox. That's not what Xbox right now is. I think they're going to remain for a while. Their brand is going to remain around gaming. So they're going to major on gaming and minor in streaming of video. And we want to major in streaming video and having Boxy as an alternative to pay TV. And I don't know if we'll ever go into games, but...
Right.
So I don't think it's a direct competition, but it's indirect competition. You know, a long answer to a short question.
Yeah, that's fine. I think it was Dwayne Knight who asked, or somebody else here. I'm sorry, I can't find it right off the bat. But here it is, Captain Bob. What's the difference between Boxy and Roku?
So Roku, first, is doing a very good job in what it does. And it, you know, what it does, it's an app launcher, I would call it. Just allows you to find apps and run them on your TV. Boxy is trying to be more of a platform. So it has a discovery layer. We aggregate all the TV shows into one place, all the movies into one place. You can search across them. It's social, plays all kind of video formats, has a web browser, and has live TV, so you can watch broadcast TV programs on Boxy. All those are things you cannot do with Roku. But again, Roku, if you just want, you know, a cheap way to get Netflix on your TV, Roku is a great device. We try to be a bit more than that. You know, whether we'll be successful with that or not, you know, time will tell. But I think the combination of live TV broadcasts from broadcast channels and simple discovery and, you know, having it all work seamlessly on your TV and your iPad, that's where we'll try and excel. And hopefully that would make a big enough difference for people so they'll decide to pick up a Boxy Box.
Luis asked the same question about Western Digital Live, Popcorn, Xtreamer. You do have some competition out there.
Yeah, those, you know, WD, Xtreamer, and what was it? Pop
popcorn hour.
Yeah. I think they would fall more into the category of streamers. So they're trying, maybe I'm doing somebody a disservice here, so I apologize, but they're trying to be the best in accessing files that you have on your computer, on your TV. I think on that front, actually, I would go toe-to-toe, put Boxy against each one of those, and I think we'll come out on top in terms of our format support, how easy it is to maintain and access, metadata that we provide, and so on. But those are all, again, I think, good products. I think on that front specifically, we spend a lot of time in Excel. I think if you research online and speak with people, I think most people will tell you that Box is the best streamer in the market right now, which we're very proud of, and that's there's many users out there that love us specifically for that reason.
Mm-hmm. And Fotis in the chat room talks about HD audio dropouts. I haven't experienced that myself, but he asks if he or she, never know, when will Boxy release a firmware update with a new SDK format to fix these audio dropouts. Have you ever heard reports of that?
Yeah, definitely. This is top of mind for us. We have certain formats of HD video and HD audio, and a combination of those that would result in intermittent dropouts for consumers, which is extremely annoying if you come across it. So if you play a file that has a setup that generates that glitch, it's extremely frustrating. And to fix it requires us not just something that we can do on our own. We need to work with Intel in order to do it. And it's been out there for a while. It's been an open issue for a long time. Frustrates consumers and frustrates us. And, you know, we don't have a definite date for when we can solve it. But I hope that we could, because this is an issue that upsets many consumers, including that person on your chat room.
Yeah. Beatmaster asks, how was it to work with D-Link? Any culture shocks?
I think you can ask them the same, because, you know, we're this combination of American and Israeli. So I don't know that we're famous for being easy to work with. But no, overall, I think the experience with D-Link was very good. I think we see eye to eye on many fronts. They're very aggressive in this category. You know, it's great as a small startup to work with a company that generates over $1 billion in revenue and is committed to the project and is being very open. And, you know, we spend a lot of time with them, both here in the US and Taiwan. You know, obviously, like in any partnership, there's moments when you want to rip each other's heads off. But in most cases...
that's true in any relationship, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah. But in most cases, we have a great time. We we really appreciate what each one brings to the table. We focus on the software and the experience, and they can bring out a device, something that we would never be able to do on our own. We don't have a hardware engineer on board, and we don't have salespeople that go into channel, and we don't know how to manage a device manufacturer in China and supply chain issues, all those things D-Link could do and does very well. So I think it's a perfect partnership, and the relationship reflects it. It's fun, and Taiwan has some great food and great entertainment, and I love visiting there. So
very good.
I couldn't be more happy with the partnership.
Good. Vincent asks about making the keys on the remote backlit. Somebody else, it might have been Vincent in the chat room, said, the color scheme's a little tricky. It's basically dark gray on black. I personally didn't have any trouble with that, because since there are only three buttons and a navigation pad, I could find it very easily by feel. I assume that making the keys backlit would also reduce the battery life too.
That's true, and you know, there's a small, you know, thing we could do to solve it, and we've done it. So he's probably using a remote that that was one of the earlier releases. Later releases, probably the device you have, the printing is actually in a white in color that does does make it easier to read in the dark, so you can see the print on the buttons. The initial version was
gray. Is it a little bit glow in the dark?
Yeah, but the initial version that came out was gray, which was a stupid mistake for us to make. You could detect it by using the device in a dark room, which in many cases you don't watch TV in a sunlight room. So, we fixed it just with the print on the keys. But next time we do a full QWERTY keyboard on a remote, I think making it backlit does make sense. It does introduce an issue of battery life, obviously.
Yeah. Beatmaster asks, do you agree with Apple? Should Flash go away?
Yeah, I would say so. I think it's at this point in its life, it creates a lot of consumer frustration. And I think the judgment is pretty clear by this point. I think HTML5 and other formats of video have proven to be more easy for devices to handle. So I don't know what the future of Flash video. I would love to see a future where there's a bit less formats and they're easier on processing power and battery life. And I think that's where the industry is headed. So I don't think Flash has a bright future as a video format on TVs, at least.
Yeah. Well, we're really coming to the end of a fascinating hour. There was one last question that I was going to ask, and somebody in the chat room asked as well. The Boxy Box does do 3D. Is there any 3D content over the top, as it were, available?
Yeah, there's 3D content that is available from Vudu that you can access on the platform. So you can rent 3D movies, and obviously you'll need a 3D TV in order to enjoy it.
Of course.
And there's some sites where you can get 3D content, but the most, and premium content you can find on Vudu. But I think it's really at the early days of 3D over the top. 3D in general, is still a bit challenging to get her. Mainstream support. I assume it's going to happen, and once it happens, it will also be available over the top. It does require more bandwidth for high quality 3D streaming, so it's not going to be something that you can enjoy with a 2 megabit connection, most likely. But again, getting back to where we started the conversation, I think bandwidth is improving consistently in most places in the US, and there's reasons to be optimistic there. Mm-hmm. 3D, I think it's still going to take a while until it becomes really popular.
And then what about 4K? Talk about 4K. A bandwidth hog.
Exactly. Or 8K or 16K, like some companies demonstrated at CES. First, it's amazing.
Yes. And
it's definitely going to be a challenge to deliver with existing bandwidth technology. But I think long run, I would never bet against the tech companies solving the bandwidth and delivery issues. So it may be that in short term, again, the internet is challenged in delivering the Super Bowl to 50 million homes at once in HD. But fast forward 10 years or go back 10 years and see where we were in terms of video and where we are today. If we keep on the same pace of innovation, which everything indicates that we do, I wouldn't discount or I wouldn't bet against the internet internet video just because of capacity or technology.
Right. Well, I want to thank you so much, Avner Ronan, CEO and co-founder of Boxy. We've had a great hour of discussion here. Sorry to the chat room that I couldn't get to all the questions. There were so many of them. But I want to thank you so much for being on the show, and best of luck with Boxy. I'm going to keep looking at it, and I do have a few comments that I'll forward to you, and hopefully I look forward to a continuing improved user experience. Thanks so much for being here.
Great. Thank you. It was great to be here.
You can, of course, learn all about Boxy at boxy.tv. My online home is hometheater.com, and you can email me at scott@twit.tv And you can follow me on Twitter at HTGeekScott. Next week, my guest geek is scheduled to be Jürgen Herre, the chief scientist at Fraunhofer IIS Audio and Multimedia. Now, this show will record at a special time next week at 12:30 p.m. Pacific time, 3:30 Eastern, 1 hour earlier than usual, because Jürgen is in Europe on Central European time, and he asked not to have to stay up quite so late. So we're going to do it 1 hour earlier next week. I sure hope you will join me for that. Until then, geek out.